Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have a delicious, well, we'll have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the most recent five, including this one just about when we get done with it, are archived at the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the most recent five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about resiliency and how to be resilient in case things, well, don't go exactly how we planned them. So I think our first question is going to be, how do we define resiliency? What on earth is it? And let's start with just a dictionary definition. Just got it out of Webster's, which is the big English language dictionary. And it says that resiliency is the ability to recover from or adjust easily to change or misfortune. The ability to recover from or adjust easily to change or misfortune. What do you think about that? Oh, thank you for, we have quite a few people already. Thank you very much for all of your participation. Let's see. You know, this is a really good point. Sula says that being resilient is really the ability not to panic. Good point. The ability to be able to stay calm, to not panic, because sometimes something unexpected happens. Or sometimes we suddenly have a different idea or think about changing course, or something outside of our control happens. And we have to have the ability not to panic because, well, we're usually the leader, the third party impartial, the holder of the meeting, the creator of the seminar or the workshop or whatever it is that we're doing. And the ability not to panic. Very good idea, Sula and others, and I'm getting a lot of agreement that, yeah, that's resiliency. Don't just try not to panic. Just keep your head. Keep calm. And, you know, it's a very good point. And Diana says that it may not be easy, but you need to appear in control of the situation. It might not be easily done, but you need to appear in control of the situation. And I love, thank you, Diana, I love the word appear, because, you know, that's kind of true. You have to at least have the attitude that you're in control, even if inside, deep within your psyche, you go, oh my goodness, oh, can't panic, right? According to Sula and others. And yes, I'm getting a lot of agreement. You need to appear in control. People are saying you need to be in control. Yes, that would be the optimum. That would be the goal, to really be in control and to be able to master the situation and to go forward. But at least immediately, you at least need to appear in control of the situation. Well, a good idea, way of putting it. And, you know, that does come a little bit from experience, too. Because after you've been doing this for a while, and all of you know that I've been doing it a long while, you kind of, nothing really flusters you. You can always appear in control while you're thinking about it for a second. And thinking, now, what should I do in this situation? And Irene says that you need to remember your leadership role and the other participants will look to you for guidance. Yeah. You need to remember that you're in a leadership role and other participants will look to you for guidance. And that's where you need to at least appear in control and really take control, right? That's the whole idea of resiliency, is you need to be able to handle it, need to be able to adapt to change or misfortune. And, you know, people are taking issue with the part of the definition that says easily. Remember, Webster said ability to recover from or adjust easily to change or misfortune. And you know what? I think it's a very good point. People are saying that there's nothing easy about it, and thank you for all of your participation, that it takes some practice and self-control and the ability to remain calm and to not panic and to guide the other participants forward, which is a real good point, Irene and others. We got a lot of agreement on that. You know, this is a very good point. If the group is affected, which undoubtedly it will, the issues are being affected, and it might be something that is not within your control, so you need to give guidance and the other participants look to you for leadership. Mm-hmm. And Namir and others are saying, thank you for all of your participation, are saying that the key is to include everyone in the new direction and ask for advice. That's a very good point. Because you can say, well, you know, this is what we're going to do. You know, everybody remain calm. We're still in the game. We're going to get there. We're going to get our goal accomplished. But you need to, as Namir says, you need to include everyone in the new direction and ask for advice. Yes, we do not act in a vacuum ever, do we? We need to ask the other participants what they think. What should we do? Let's reason this out. Let's think about this new direction, this new idea, this some sort of a change that has occurred. You know, and I'm going to go for change rather than misfortune. And a lot of you, thank you for all of your participation, are giving examples of, well, some of them are misfortune that has occurred during the process of going towards your goal, during the process of mediation. And oftentimes it is outside of your control. Some sort of a law changed, a rule changed. The situation changed due to some sort of a natural disaster. People are sending in examples like from Katrina, which was the big hurricane that caused the floods and everything in the United States. Yes, sometimes things happen, and you have to be resilient and be able to adapt and to go forward. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm getting a lot of questions, and they're very good questions, and basically they can be boiled down to a thank you for all of your participation. The question is, how do you develop this resiliency? Yeah, it's nice to talk about it, and you recognize it in others, but how can we develop this? That's what we promised to talk about, how to develop resiliency. Mm-hmm. You know, and thank you. A lot of people are using the same word. A lot of people are saying you just need it. Resiliency is developed by practicing it. And Brian and others are saying that you practice remaining calm when the unexpected happens. You practice it. You have a contingency plan. Mm-hmm. And people are saying, yes, but how? That's a very good point. So the question is still, how do we develop resiliency? And we've got the idea that you practice it. You practice remaining calm when the unexpected happens. And even for the small things in life, you know how in a lot of times things kind of go a little bit wrong. It has nothing to do with the process or our mediation or our workshops or our seminars. It's not a big deal. But in life, things sometimes don't go as we expect. And it's good to practice resiliency outside of the process that we're talking about. Gives you some practice, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Innocenzio says that, and other people are saying, thank you for your participation, that you prepare, in order to practice, it's not so much just practice on the small things, that I got some disagreement on that. Thank you for your participation. But that you practice and you think about the various scenarios that might happen. And he says that even if it's not exact, even what you think might happen isn't exactly what does happen, that if you practice and think about the scenarios, you will be prepared for other ideas and issues, even if it's not exactly the scenario that you pictured. And it's a, and that's a, thank you, that's a very excellent point that you, and I do this all the time, you know, there's the word visualize gets a little bit overused in describing this, but you do, you kind of think about, well, what are the other issues that might come up? What are the various components to this? Let's think about this. And if this happens, or if this argument is put forward, what do we think we should do about it? What do you think the other counter argument would be? How you see, you think about everybody's side, so to speak, and how we might come towards the center, towards each other. Mm-hmm. And the various scenarios of what... All right, I suppose, people are saying that you're supposed to visualize in a positive manner. Thank you. Yes, that is true when you visualize the outcome. And really to visualize the various scenarios is adapting to change, but just like I said, I'm not going to really think about the misfortune part. It's just change. It's just different scenarios, different ideas, different ways that the process could occur, and that they have nothing to do with misfortune. It just has to do with, well, changing your viewpoint and thinking about how it would go if this happened. You know, see, it's resiliency, but not in a bad way. It's not necessarily a negative thought. It could be a positive thought. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Monica says, as other people are saying, I wonder if this is the right way of thinking. Well, she says, and others are using the word mantra. You use a word to focus yourself before responding when things go a wee bit sideways. You get a mantra word, kind of like a focus word. You know, sometimes when you do meditation, you have a focusing word that you think about just to kind of, people are using the word center yourself. And I suppose that's what it is. That's what focus is, when you center yourself. Thank you for all of your participation. Yeah, Monica says that you use a mantra word, something that you say to focus. We're going to think about this now, and we're going to be calm and not panic, and we're going to work it around. Ah, yes. People give me examples of their mantra words, and I'm not going to say them because they seem to be rather personal. You pick something that is, I must confess, people ask me, do you have a mantra word? No, I do not. I usually just take 3 deep breaths, well, kind of inwardly, not necessarily in the room that everybody can see, and I just go, and then I try to think before I speak. Because that's always a very valuable act, right? So a word that you think before you speak in order to center yourself. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting point. Several people are saying, but Stephen says that he uses a generic sentence to start the response so you have time to think reasonably. Oh, I do that all the time, don't you? Very good point. A generic sentence to start the response so that you have time to think for a moment there. I tend to say, oh, yes, you've caught me, yes. People say that I say it depends quite a bit on this show. And it's true. It depends on how complex and how much change and how much resiliency and how much we have to adapt to. But, you know, if you have like Stephen calls it a generic sentence, it'll give you a moment to collect your thoughts so that you can have a reasonable response and not just kind of go, You see? And I say things like, well, that's a different idea. Have you ever said a thing like that? You see, it gives you a moment to gauge the response of the other participants in the room, right? And to think about where we're going with this. And you don't have to think about your generic sentence. I suppose it's like a mantra word, but you say it out loud. And it's, you know, like, well, that's a different idea. And sometimes I even say, it depends, just like I do on the show. here's a good sentence. Natasha says, let's think about this. Mm-hmm. See, that's like, well, that's a different idea. Mm-hmm. And one of those kind of little things that you say while you're thinking about it and trying to decide how flexible we're going to be. Yes. Mm-hmm. Good point, Stephen. Thank you. Yes. You know, Zuma says an interesting point. Zuma says, call a timeout. If you've really got something that has been surprised you during the process, surprised you in the room, that somebody has kind of changed subject and everybody seems to be heading that direction and it's a whole new idea, you can call a timeout, right? And people are saying to end the meeting. Gee, I don't like to do that. But a timeout is good. It gives us a breather. And we can all think about that for a moment because it's new. And if it's a completely different direction and we've already kind of decided where we're going and what the goal is going to be, you have to think about why you're setting off on a different path. Is it a good idea or a bad idea? I mean, it might be a good idea, right? It's not necessarily a misfortune to have to change your goal, to change your perception. But it is something that you have to decide is the proper thing to do. I mean, was the other path wrong? And you were just mistaken? And now you're going down the right one? So you have to think about it. Call a timeout. Good idea, Zuma. Yes, I do that. And that's why we have frequent timeouts sometimes, because we all got to think before we open our mouths and say something in public that, well, was rather ill-advised and doesn't push us forward. Mm-hmm. You know, Kyle, another saying, you can ask for further study and return to the issues that were being discussed before and think about the change and do some further study before we start discussing it, because people aren't prepared. Good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Samantha says that she likes the 3 deep breaths thing. I don't really literally take 3 deep breaths so that everybody can see it. But it's the concept of, yeah, let's see, take 3 deep breaths, breathe, as they say, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to say it depends again. Depending on the group, depending on the issues, and depending just on the situation itself. Thank you for your participation. I have quite a few people saying that when you need to really, really adapt to a change or adapt to even a misfortune or something that has happened, I have quite a few people saying to pray with your group, to have a group prayer, to hold hands and pray for guidance. And yes, and a lot of you know that I am indeed a Christian, and I do quite a few groups that are of a similar religious background. And if the people are, if the participants are, or if the issues have a religious element to them, I'm very much in favor of take hands in the circle and pray, because, of course, that is a good way to get together, to come together. But it really depends on the group, and you cannot force it. And if some people in the group don't want to, that is not a good thing to suggest in that case, because you don't want some people joining in prayer and then you have outsiders not in the group. So in my opinion, I'm getting a lot of agreement on this, in my opinion, you either have a group where you can do that with and it is appropriate, or you do not. There's no mid-ground on it. You know, Noelle says that instead of having a group prayer, you can call for a quiet moment of reflection. I like that. Mm-hmm. Not a prayer in a certain religious sense, but in a reflection sense. Call for a quiet moment of reflection. Mm-hmm. And that's something you might also hold hands in a circle for. And just nobody actually says a prayer to the Lord, but everybody does whatever they think is appropriate, and they think. They think, they pray, they reflect. He gives us all time to take 3 deep breaths, right? I think that might be a good way to develop resiliency in the group. And it also might make us more like a team, huh? More together. And you know, this is a very good point, too. Duane is saying that you should never raise your voice or get pulled into the argument. You see, when things change, people get a little agitated sometimes. And it's, no, we're not going to yell at each other. You need to practice not raising your voice, not getting frustrated. Yeah, people are saying the word frustrated. They kind of get frustrated and start to get excited. We're in the same boat, and we're all going to handle this together, and we're not going to yell at each other, right? We're not going to raise our voices. And Tim says that oftentimes you have to assume the role of referee. Well, yeah, hopefully not physically, for heaven's sakes, but you might have to, as the third party impartial, as the leader, you might have to be the referee. Between, we need to change this, and we don't need to change this. You know, I think that leads us to our next question. And it's a good, and a lot of people are asking this, not only how do you develop, but how do you actually accept the change or the misfortune and actually use it to the advantage of the group, to your advantage? How do you turn around change and misfortune that seems negative, like oh my, things have changed, that's bad, and you use it to your advantage? Yes. How do we do that? How do we make it a good thing? And in fact, I always think that resiliency is really the ability to say, well, that's an idea. Just like I told you, you know, the sentence that goes with it. And, you know, that's what makes it interesting. A lot of times things change rather drastically. And it's an idea that sometimes needs to be put out. And Kelly makes a very good point. He says that you regard it as a natural progression of ideas and welcome discussion. Regard it as a natural progression of ideas and welcome discussion about it. Change is not necessarily bad. And sometimes it makes us think more. It makes us think outside the box. You know, I know that's an expression, but it does. It makes us think, my goodness, I never thought of that. But that's a different way of doing it. Not necessarily a better or worse one, just different. You know, Essie and others are also pointing out that it is absolutely true that if the change comes, especially if the change comes from the outside. Now, sometimes change is just a different idea that somebody in the group is having, but sometimes change comes from the outside, right? We have some sort of a change in circumstances, we'll call it. And when that happens, oftentimes it's good for the group because it's a bonding experience. Yeah, as he says, a bonding experience for the group when the change misfortune is from an outside influence. Mm-hmm. And gives the example about a law changing, something that changed in the regulations and the law that the government did. And it bonds us together and makes us more of a cohesive group because we go, oh my goodness, now what's happened? We have to still move forward. We have to do something about that. It makes a bonding experience. It could be very positive to get us to go and meet more proactive and bond as a group. Mm-hmm. And James says it creates a new focus. And it does. Yeah, creates a new focus. That's really adapting and handling the change in misfortune and using it to our advantage. Mm-hmm. It bonds us. It's a natural progression. It creates a new focus, right? And it's Adrian and others are saying that change is not necessarily a misfortune. You've tried a wrong path and that you have now been corrected. That's a very good point. Sometimes we think we know what needs to be done and how we need to do it, but we can adapt to change and really take a better path. It could be an improvement. That would use it to our advantage, right? Adrian says you often tried a wrong path and have now been corrected. Mm-hmm. And Rick and others are using the term perception. He says it's a question of perception. You need to perceive the present situation accurately to make decisions for future success. You need to perceive the present situation accurately to make decisions for future success. You have to appraise it. You have to say, well, this is what has changed and how has it affected us, which is the key to it. Because just change is nothing. How it affects you, your perception of it, is what counts. Mm-hmm. And Joan says you need to take control of the situation and lead others into the revision so that you don't become discouraged or angered. Good point. Because sometimes you've gotten pretty far, and we all know where we're going, right? We all know what we're doing. And then all of a sudden something changes, or there's been a misfortune, or there's just been a change. It doesn't have to be a misfortune. And you go, oh, we put all this time in, and now it's not going to work. I'm going to give up. No, you need to take control of the situation, according to Joan and others, and lead others into the revision so that you don't become discouraged or angered. Mm-hmm. So you don't just give up or get kind of surly, which, you know, that's not going to help the group acquire their goals if you just get mad, right? Got to do something about it. Mm-hmm. You know, Bayani and others are using an expression that is very true. I suppose it's kind of an American saying. But have you ever heard the expression poise under pressure? P-O-I-S-E, poise. Poise under pressure. That when things get kind of hectic or stressful, that you remain calm. Mm-hmm. And Bayani says it's a question of poise under pressure. You need the self-confidence to go forward and understand how to proceed. You need some self-confidence too, right? That's something you can develop. Just like resilience, you develop self-confidence. I know how to handle this. I can handle whatever comes my way. Hmm? That's a good idea, right? That's self-confidence. Mm-hmm. And that leads us to a flurry of questions. And I think they could be basically, thank you for all of your participation, that they could basically sum up in the sentence, how do you know what to do? So we've developed resiliency. We have used it to our, and we have taken the change in misfortune and we have used it to our advantage. We have turned it around. But the question is, well, how do you know what to do in any given situation? How do you know what to do? You know, and Laura really says it, really the crux of it. She says that you have to make reasonable conclusions and decisions responding to the new situation. Reasonable conclusions and decisions responding to the new situation. You've got to act in a reasonable manner. First of all, no one will respect you if you don't. And second of all, remember our in prior shows we've talked about taking steps forward and kind of building a foundation. Yeah, and Matthew and others are using the word flexible. You need to be flexible because you may need to modify your ultimate goal. It may now be a step towards your ultimate goal, what you're doing. It may take a little longer. Or maybe faster. It doesn't have to be a misfortune. But you need to be flexible and to understand how that you need to modify something. Your goal, your process, who you're talking to, you have to modify it. Mm-hmm. You need to be flexible. And Catherine says you need to step back to create a new foundation for going forward. If you've gotten fairly far along and the change is fairly broad, you might indeed need to step back and say, wait a minute, let's see what we need to do to build the foundation, to do the first step. Who do we need to contact? What do we need to do? What process do we need to do? What procedure? You see, it depends on what you're doing, but you might need to step back. And you might go, well, we've put some time in, but now things have changed, and we got to still go forward. The ultimate goal is still really there. It's just how we're getting to it and how big it will be has changed a smidge. But we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. You know, John says you need to engage everyone in the group and create a team effort to be flexible and resilient. Yes, it is a team effort, isn't it? And you need to encourage each other and to make sure that nobody drops out of the process. You need to engage everyone in the group to create a team effort to be flexible and resilient. And yes, groups can be flexible and resilient because the people within them understand that not everything goes textbook perfect, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Cameron and others are saying that you need a time out away from the prior issues to look at the new circumstances and to think. And I'm very fond of advocating thinking before acting and before speaking. You need to think. You need to take a time out. You need to think about it. And this is wonderful because it's a segue into the next part of the show, right? It's, thank you, Maya. Thank you for all of your participation. Maya says that the time out, where we're going to think about it for a second, for a little while, and we're going to look at the prior issues, and we're going to look at what has changed, and we're going to be reasonable and think about how does that affect us, and how can we use it to our advantage so that we have a good outcome, so that we have a success. And Maya says that it's the perfect time for the Recipe for Peace Now convivial atmosphere, so you can think as a team and not dissolve into finger-pointing or arguments. Thank you. I love you. Maya, that's so great. Maya says it's the perfect time for the Recipe for Peace Now convivial atmosphere, so you can think as a team and not dissolve into finger-pointing or arguments. And that really is what we advocate, isn't it? You know, I know I've said this before, and if you'd like to hear prior shows, the last five are archived on the website, the most recent five, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. And yes, we've talked about the Recipe for Peace Now we understand what we advocate is using mediation principles to get people to talk to each other rather than to fight, right? And one of the ways we do this is through using food, not because we are hungry, but, well, we might be, but not really. But the food that we talk about is a tool, because in any get-together, even if it's a workshop, a seminar, even if we're basically all of like mind, there comes a time when somebody during the negotiation has to give a little, has to compromise a wee bit, and often maybe more than a wee bit. And the knee-jerk reaction to compromise is, no, let them do it. And if you let them out of the room in that condition, in a no condition, then the no will solidify. And they'll talk to somebody worse than they are, and it'll be hard to change. But if they stay in the room because we've made a convivial atmosphere and we're no longer sitting around a table or something, we are, well, for lack of a better word, and I know it's an overused one, kind of networking, finding things out about each other. If you're having a convivial atmosphere, there's some food, and you're talking about things, you might go, well, you know what? I could give just a little bit. If he or she could give just a little bit, we've already reached a negotiated compromise. So the food is a tool because it creates a convivial atmosphere. And yes, people are writing in the word labels, and you are absolutely right. I say this every time, but it is so important. And thank you for all the listeners who've come back, and thank you for all the new people. If you're going to have food, and you are, because it's a good tool, however it is that you're communicating, phone, email, whatever, you need to ask your participants if anybody has a food allergy, a food restriction, or a religious prohibition to some type of food. You don't want anybody to get sick or hurt or offended or anything. They're supposed to have a good time. So you need to know that, and you need to tell everybody. And whenever people are bringing food to share, or even if it's catered or whatever, it needs to, and you tell people ahead of time, the food needs to be labeled. Not what's it called, like meatloaf, but what is in it, so that people who are going out to eat it can make a reasoned decision as to whether or not they can eat that, whatever it is. You know, they might not be able to. So we're going to label everything. Now, those of you who have been here before, thank you for coming back. You know that I think the host should have some extra food, right? Because you don't want to run out. And you should have at least one safe recipe and an adventure recipe, if you'd like, also. Now, what makes a recipe a safe recipe? And the answer is that it is a dish that is not generally something that people are allergic to, have a dietary prohibition against, or religious prohibition. It is generally something that people can eat, and you've already taken a survey, so to speak, of your participants, and they can eat it. And it still needs to be labeled. And it has not terrible many items, ingredients, and your participants would be familiar with the ingredients. They would know if they could eat them or not. It would not be a surprise. And, of course, this is a global show. And if you'd like to do some substitution or whatever, just remember the label at the time, ask beforehand rules. So our safe recipe is going to be a sweet garlic eggplant. I really like eggplants, so it's just one of my favorite vegetables. And this is quite delicious because there's a lovely sauce to it. So let's start. We're going to have about four nice-size eggplants that we're going to cut into cubes. Cut that all into cubes. About a goodly amount of oil, say about 8 tablespoons of oil, because we're going to need it. 2 teaspoons, well, let's do garlic cloves, 2 garlic cloves that we're going to chop. I know that I put sugar in things, and people say you put sugar in a lot of things. I do. I think it brings out all the other flavors. So I'm going to tell you to take six teaspoons of very fine sugar. We call it super fine in the States. Some places call it caster sugar. The idea is the kind that is very fine, not the kind that is large grains and doesn't dissolve really fast. Yes, people are telling me sometimes it's called bartender sugar because it dissolves in liquid. Yeah, something that whatever it is, but it's super fine. 2 tablespoons of soy sauce, 2 tablespoons of cider vinegar, and of course we're going to have lots and lots of steamed rice, right? It's not part of the recipe exactly, but we're going to steam up a whole bunch of rice and have it in a big bowl on the side so people can take as much as they like. Yes, pardon me. And, you know, people are asking, yes, I do think a rice steamer is one of those things, if you're going to have guests and other people and potlucks and things, I do think it's a valuable tool because it's so easy and then you have a big amount. So we're going to take 3 tablespoons of our oil. Remember, we've got about 8 of them. We're going to take 3 tablespoons and we're going to put it in a big frying pan. It looks cool to use a wok if you're going to do this with other people, but a frying pan will do. I actually don't own a wok. And we're going to coat the sides, swirl it all around so it's not just a little puddle in the middle. We're going to add 1/2 the eggplant. We're going to stir fry it for about 5 minutes or until it's all browned and all the oil is absorbed. That's why we're using the oil in batches, right? Because it absorbs into the eggplant as it's going brown all the way around. It takes about 5 minutes. We're going to then take that eggplant batch out of the frying pan, and we're going to put it on a paper towel to drain it a little bit and set it aside. Now we're going to stir fry the rest of them, and we're going to put another 3 tablespoons of oil, do the same thing, line the pan, cook it, and do the remaining eggplants, right? They'll turn brown, they'll absorb it. Okay, so we've used about 6 tablespoons. Yeah, of oil. Now we're going to put the other couple of tablespoons in the wok. We're going to coat it again, frying pan, the wok, whatever it is you're using. And we're going to add the garlic. And we're going to cook that, stir fry it, until it's nice and brown and it smells yummy. Then we're going to add the sugar, the soy sauce, the vinegar, and we're going to stir it all around. Now you're going to look at this now and see if you've got a nice sauce. If it's too dry, you'll add a little bit more of the soy sauce and a little bit more of the cider vinegar. It's not an exact science. You have to kind of look at it. We're making a lovely sauce. We're going to bring it to the boil, and we're going to stir it, and we're going to add our cooked eggplant to it, right? And we're going to mix the eggplant in without breaking the cubes, and we're going to incorporate them into the sauce. And we're going to have the whole thing, and now we're going to simmer it for about another 5 minutes or so, because we want the eggplant to absorb the sauce like it absorbs the oil, right? Eggplant is the kind of a thing that will absorb stuff. And anyway, so now we're done. We've cooked the eggplant in 2 batches, right? Because there's quite a bit of it, and you need it to have a little bit of room. We've done the garlic, we've done the liquid, and we've done the sugar, made a sauce, incorporated the eggplant into the sauce, brought the whole thing to a boil, the sauce to a boil, incorporated and simmered the eggplant until it absorbed the sauce, the liquid, and we're done. And this is one, and then you serve it over the steamed rice, of course. And this is one of those recipes that if you have the facilities and if you judge it the proper thing for the group, you know, it's another it depends. But if you have the facilities and they're the right group for it, and you, of course, can make the eggplant a little ahead of time, cube it. But even so, cubing an eggplant is fast. It's kind of a lovely recipe to make as a group activity. It's a team-building thing, isn't it? To actually do it together. It smells nice. It's delicious. You get kind of immediate gratification because it's basically a stir fry, and then you get to eat it over the steamed rice, which, of course, we steamed ahead of time, right, because it's all in the steamer. And it is so simple enough to do, and it is basically a vegetarian recipe, and most people are not allergic to whatever is in it or have a religious or dietary prohibition, but you got to check, of course. So that's our safe recipe, and it's kind of fun to make in a group, right? Smells nice, doesn't take too much time, doesn't have too many ingredients to it, and it's really not very complicated. And that's one of my favorite things to do when we have our time out, at least one of them, oftentimes the first one, and also towards the end of the process when people are getting kind of tired. You see, if you do something together, it keeps you together as a group, right? And these stir fries are wonderful for that. I know we've talked about this before. People are saying, I always say that about the stir fries. I do, because it's the easiest thing to make in a short period of time. It smells nice, and you really made it and not just warmed something that came pre-made. So, yeah, I think it is. Okay, so now on to our adventure recipe. We're going to do a sweet and sour pork. Pardon me. My goodness, I'm going to take a little bit of water. Hang on. Pardon me, got all excited there for a second. I love sweet and sour pork. My goodness, that shows this is a live show. Pardon me. So, you know how sweet and sour pork, we've had recipes on our show, and you know they're archived by the recipe, so also in addition to by the show, and where we cube the pork. This one actually has slices. It's very pretty like that. And it's a little different style than the very sweet, sweet and sour pork. We've talked about that, too, where we do the pineapples and the sweet outside. And this one is a little bit less sweet, and it has cucumber slices and it has pork slices. And it looks very nice, and it's very delicious. So anyway, it is our adventure recipe, pardon me, because it has more ingredients. People are probably familiar with the ingredients, but it has pork. And pork is something that people have a religious or dietary, or well, allergy, I don't know, but a religious or dietary prohibition to. And you have to ask. And people are already asking if they can substitute a different kind of protein, like chicken or lamb or something. And the answer is yes. You know, actually, what goes very well in a sweet and sour sauce is either chicken or duck. Duck is kind of nice in this. Pardon me. In my area, duck is kind of hard to get and rather expensive. So you might notice that I use a lot of pork and chicken in these recipes. The key is to cook it through. That's the sentence that I was going to say. Cook it through. Okay. So we're going to have a pound of pork because it's the traditional and it's quite yummy. And we're going to cut it into thin strips. You know what I usually do when I cut pork into thin strips? And I don't know if this is, if you need a very sharp knife, of course. I usually refrigerate it and I cut it cold because if it's cold, it's a little easier and a little less soft to cut. So I actually even put it in the freezer for half an hour, and then I cut it into thin strips with a nice sharp knife. Watch your fingers. Pardon me. 2 tablespoons of oil, vegetable oil. 4 garlic cloves that we're going to actually slice because they're going to look real nice in this. Yes, I know people say that I use a lot of garlic. Use less if you don't like it. An onion that we're going to slice, also very thin. One of those mandolins is nice for this. Or food processor, people going to food processor, yes. And yes, I'm going to put sugar in it. 1 tablespoon of that super fine sugar that I'm so fond of that really dissolves. 1 red pepper that we're going to seed and take the membranes out. We're going to dice that up. I think a green pepper goes nice in it too. We're going to do the same thing, just a regular green pepper. And we're going to seed it and dice it. A cucumber that we're going to very thinly slice on our mandolin also, or very thinly sliced if you can do with a knife, but whatever. And because it's nice with the slices of pork. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have half pound of fresh pineapple that we're going to cut into small chunks. All of you know that it is really common to use canned pineapple. I will use it. I think it's just fine. Canned pineapple needs to be drained, and it needs to be put in a little bit later because it doesn't have as firm a consistency when you cook it. But yes, fresh pineapple is, of course, better. Canned pineapple, there's nothing wrong with it. And people are already asking this, and I'm going to use 2 tablespoons of soy sauce. Please do not use fish sauce. I know it's traditional to use fish sauce in all of these things. I always substitute soy sauce because you never know when somebody's allergic to fish. And sometimes fish sauce has a shellfish component, like oysters or something in it, and people are really allergic to that. You can be allergic to both sides. And it's just, I think fish sauce is dangerous. I know that a lot of you disagree with me and say that soy sauce is not the same thing, but it's pretty much the same thing. And I know it's salty without being fishy, but that's all right. Yes, so use soy sauce, please. Please don't use fish sauce. Okay, so we've got all our ingredients. We've cut our pork into the thin strips, right? We're going to heat the oil in the same large frying pan that we always use, or a wok if you've got it. We're going to add the garlic, and we're going to make it golden, and we're going to stir fry it around, and then we're going to add the pork, and we're going to cook it through. We're going to stir fry it for about 5 minutes and turn it and like that so it's nice and cooked through. Now we're going to add the onion, and we're going to also stir fry it in. Now we've got all this delicious smell, and the pork is really cooked through, and we've got the garlic and the onion. Now we're going to add the soy sauce, the sugar, a little bit of pepper maybe, and we're going to stir fry that again. We're going to just toss it around because we don't want to break any, you know, we don't want the pieces of pork to get ruined because they're lovely slices. Mm-hmm. Now we've got that all going. We've got everything mixed together. And yes, people are asking if I put the sugar in a little bit of water because it makes it dissolve first. The answer is you don't need to if you use the super fine. It will incorporate in when you're tossing and stir-frying the mixture. If you would like to, you certainly could use like a teaspoon of water. It's not going to make much difference to the recipe. Or you could put it in with the soy sauce. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got the pork, the onions, and the garlic, and the soy sauce and the sugar. We've got that all in our pan. We have stir-fried it. We've mixed it together for about 3 minutes more. Now we're going to stir in the peppers, the cucumber, the pineapple. And if you like and you think it looks pretty, and it does have some taste, a few chopped scallions in... I suppose you could call it diced. You make those little diagonal slices out of them. You can use a scissors. It's kind of easy. And we're going to stir that all around, toss it together, stir fry it for a few minutes more. Delicious. We've got it. It's all incorporated. It is sweet and sour. It is yummy. And yes, people are asking this. Yes, you could certainly make this together too. It's a little bit more time-consuming than the eggplant because there's more to it. You know, you have to kind of cook it 3 minutes here and 4 minutes there and another 5 minutes. But, you know, it depends. I'm going to say it depends again. But it does. It depends on the group. It depends on whether or not a longer time period as a teamwork making something that smells this delicious and is this wonderful to eat and make sure that everybody in the group can eat it because otherwise someone has been excluded. But if they can, yeah, it smells really great and you can keep talking while you're doing it. You know, it's not a show. Everybody's not quiet, right? And it's a thing, it's something to do and to make together. And, of course, we have all the steamed rice to go under this also, right? have a nice big steamer of rice that goes with it. Delicious. It is easy to do. Smells really nice. And it looks beautiful, too, because you have all the slices. They've all been put together, and it incorporates beautifully, but it's still got the slices and the chunks of the pineapple and the pieces of the pepper, you know, and it's just lovely. It makes a beautiful presentation, and it smells delightful. Yes. Yes, I know. People are arguing about the fish sauce. No, please don't do it. And use something that's not, because liable to have a nasty surprise. Anyway, so that is our adventure recipe. Yes. And now I see that our time together is nearly over. Thank you very much for coming and for all of your participation. If you'd like to contact us, we are at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. The last five shows are archived on the website. And all of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you very much for coming. I hope you learned something. I always learn something from these shows, and I hope you do too. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.